Welcome back to the program. Regardless of where we stand on the issue of immigration, both legal and illegal, our relationship with Mexico must be a central pillar of American foreign and domestic policy for decades to come. How we manage that relationship will depend in large measure on the degree to which we understand our southern neighbor. That understanding includes an understanding that is cultural, political, and human. Without it, both nations, economically codependent, will face tougher times. We're going to talk about this today with my guest, Jorge Castaneda. He received his BA from Princeton and his PhD from the University of Paris. He's been a professor of political science at the University of Mexico, a senior associate at the Carnegie Institute for International Peace, a visiting professor at Princeton University and at UC Berkeley. He was Mexico's foreign minister from 2000 to 2003 and is now global distinguished professor of politics and Latin American studies at New York University. It is my pleasure to welcome Jorge Castaneda here to talk about his new book, Mañana Forever, Mexico and the Mexicans. Jorge Castaneda, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. One of the things that you talk about is that there are four or five major kind of character traits in the Mexican culture that you believe really need to be addressed before Mexico can really enter an effective 21st century relationship.
The point I try to make in my book, Mañana Forever, is that some of these national character traits, which were detected decades or ago or more by classical authors like Octavio Paz and others, like the American anthropologist Oscar Lewis, etc., were what allowed Mexico to finally become a nation after centuries of conquest, colonization, a chaotic 19th century of independence, a dictatorship, etc. Finally, after the revolution, something like a nation springs forth. And those character traits made it possible for this to happen. Mexican individualism, extreme radical individualism, where only individual solutions, even to collective problems, count. Nobody cares about any type of collective action. Two Mexicans can't get together to work together on anything. But this is what made it possible to survive four centuries of adversity. Another one, avoiding conflict, avoiding confrontation, avoiding competition, avoiding any type of verbal or other contradiction in order precisely to ensure that conflict under an extreme unequal balance of forces always means you lose. So the best way to avoid losing and being destroyed is not to fight. Thirdly, a tremendous obsession with the past and a tremendous fear of everything that is foreign, that is alien, that is different, because of this notion that during the past, Mexico was a country of victims that were successively oppressed and exploited by the Spanish, then the French, then the Americans, and everybody else. And finally, this total disregard for the law, but not in an irrational way, not in an absurd way, but in a sense for good reason, because if you have a country of laws which are ridiculous, then what you have to do is find a way to get around ridiculous laws which can't be abided by, which can't be complied with. And so you end up disregarding the law in a rational and perfectly coherent way. Well, all of these things, which were very important and in a sense very useful, today have become terribly counterproductive. They are terribly dysfunctional in regard to the country we have built thanks to these traits. Today, Mexico is a middle-class society, a representative democracy, an open economy and society, and a country that needs the rule of law like nothing else. And these character traits are incompatible with this reality which we face today.
Talk about this notion of history, and one of the things you come back to repeatedly is the way in which the Mexican culture is wedded to its history and can't escape the velocity of that history.
Well, this is a point which is very important because, you know, many countries have other forms of building a nation. What makes a nation really come together are some fundamental common traits which forge a national identity: language, race or ethnicity, religion, a certain idea, geography, an island. Mexico didn't really have any of these. And one of the things that played an enormous role in forming this nation was the idea of a common history. What do all Mexicans have in common? We have our common history. We are all Mexicans because we have this history, and everybody who has this history is Mexican. This was a terribly important trait in the country since the late 19th century and through the first 40 or 50 years of the 20th century in forging and building this nation. But of course, if that's what you have to build a nation, it better be a very powerful history. It better be a very strident history. Not glorious, in fact it's inglorious, but it has to be a history that really marks you. And so, like all countries, every country invents its history. The United States doesn't have a real history. It has a history that's in the textbooks, which was invented by textbook writers, whatever, Washington and the cherry tree. There was never any cherry tree. He didn't chop it down, and his father didn't scold him. None of that ever happened. But countries invent these stories. We in Mexico invented ours. It's a story, it's a history of victims, a history of a people systematically oppressed, taken advantage of, raped, if you will, by others. The others being most of the time from outside, but it depends how you define outside. There were traitors among the other civilizations in Mexico when the Spanish arrived who betrayed the Aztecs, forging an alliance with Cortes, which at the end of the day allowed him to defeat an infinitely more powerful enemy. This history, which we invented and which we now are obsessed with, is a history which today, of course, makes it very difficult for Mexico to move forward. Because if you've always been a country of victims and of the outsider has essentially always screwed you, then you have to continue to be very careful. Because if not, you will once again be taken advantage of.
As Mexico has become more democratic, as the society has become more open, and at the same time some economic reforms have moved into the country, what impact has that had?
Well, it's had a huge impact. Jeff, one of my longest chapters of this book, Mañana Forever, Mexico and the Mexicans, is the one I wrote about the Mexican middle class and how today Mexico has become a country, a society, where the middle class is now a majority, a small majority, around 57-58%, not an overwhelming majority. There are still an enormous amount of poor people in Mexico, more than 40 million, unquestionably, and that is intolerable and unacceptable. But nonetheless, for the first time in its history, in Mexico, there are more people belonging to the middle class than there are people living in poverty. And this, of course, changes things, I think, for the better, but it forces real changes. You can't have the kind of individualism that Mexicans have always had, and at the same time, this middle class, which, for example, has been able to acquire more than 5 million homes over the past 10 years. Because if you continue with traditional Mexican individualism, where nobody wants to live in high-rises, and everyone wants to live in a horizontal Levittown type of home, well, you don't have literally the space for that around the cities. So you have to go further and further and further away from where work is, where security is, where schools are, where hospitals are, etc., to build these homes. Mexicans have to start learning to live together, to share the elevator or the stairwell, to share the garbage chute, to share the entry to an apartment building, to share the water of the apartment building, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Things we don't do in Mexico, we've never done.
There also seems to be this trend that has gone on, and it's happened other places in Latin America too, where the middle class becomes more and more alienated from both the rich and the poor and is sort of stuck in this middle place that is not cooperative.
Well, a little bit of that is happening, but at the same time, since it is now a majority, It's much more important, for example, for politicians to try and get the vote of the middle class rather than concentrating on the poor or the rich. The middle class is becoming decisive in countries like Mexico, like Brazil, like Chile, like Uruguay. In a sense, it always was in Argentina. And this is what is now, in a sense, defining these countries. Yes, the middle class is a little bit alienated. It's a bit confused. It's not really quite ready to assume this enormous responsibility of leading these countries, of being the majority of these countries. This sort of happened overnight without anybody realizing it. And so it is a bit confused, but I think little by little it will straighten out its confusion.
Talk a little bit about the importance of the rule of law and how that really, more than anything else, needs to become the baseline that replaces, in some respects, this historical context that you were talking about earlier.
Well, a bit the point I try to make in the next to last chapter of Mañana Forever, Jeff, is that Mexico has never really had what we generally refer to as the rule of law. We have had laws which are not respected or not complied with. We have had constitutions which are wish lists more than norms. We have had legislation of all sorts, which is either meaningless or counterproductive. But as many people know from the United States and mainly from Mexicans, we know the law is rarely complied with in Mexico, whether it's going through a red light or occupying land by force or government officials ripping off the national treasury, what have you. Today, first of all, that is no longer possible because we need first to really get over this terrible situation of violence and crime and lack of security in Mexico for Mexicans, for foreigners also and for Americans also, obviously. But we have a domestic violence and crime and lack of rule of law problem in Mexico today. And we will not be able to solve this if we don't clearly establish the rule of law, which might mean doing things, for example, like legalizing drugs. Because it's very difficult, Jeff, to establish the rule of law in general and then have some laws which you know are not cannot be complied with, like, for example, laws banning drugs, because everybody knows that those laws are not complied with. Well, this is one issue we have domestically. But we are also competing in today's world for foreign investment, for foreign tourists, for foreign trade all over the world with many other countries, that some that have great advantages over us and others that don't. And we can't go on just promising people and companies and investors and everyone and governments abroad that they will be taken care of, but not by the rule of law, but rather by deals and partnerships and secret agreements, accommodation, etc. So the rule of law has become immensely important both domestically and abroad for Mexico. And I think it could also become something that sort of ties the nation together. That what is it that we have in common as Mexicans? What we have in common is this possibility of building something we've never had before, which is the rule of law.
Talk a little bit about the levels of violence that exist within the country now, in part as a result of these drug wars that have been going on and that have become the cause célèbre, really, of President Calderón, and how this can be dealt with going forward.
Well, what I try to show in my book, Mañana Forever, is that while we have a reputation for violence in Mexico, dating back to the Aztec human sacrifices, and ever since, a lot of that has always been exaggerated. And in particular, up until 2007, over the previous 20 years, levels of violence in Mexico had been and crime had been systematically declining. In terms of homicides, kidnappings, theft, automobile theft, holdups, etc., extortion, all of this had been declining through the 90s and the first decade of this century. Then in 2007, President Calderon decides to declare a new war on drugs and sends the army out into the streets and the highways and the villages to fight this war on drugs. And ever since then, violence has gone up again exponentially. If in 2007 we were down to about 8 or 9 homicides, willful homicides per 100,000 inhabitants, one of the lowest levels in Latin America, and while still higher than the United States, which is at about 5, not that far away. Today we're back up to around 25. Now, the Mexican government says, and President Calderon says, that this is the price to pay for beating the cartels, for winning the war. I have always disagreed with this war. I think it was a mistaken war, a failed war, a war that should not have been declared, that cannot be won, and that should stop immediately, because I think the cost is way too high. More than 40,000 people have died in this war. More than $50 billion have been spent in addition to what we always spent on this war. Human rights violations have become, if not commonplace, very widespread as a result of this war. And Mexico's image abroad has been severely damaged as a result of this war. So I think it's a mistaken policy. But the government is absolutely obsessed with it and has decided that this is what it wants to do, and it will not change its policy until it leaves a year and a half from now.
But what is, even after the Calderon government is gone, one wonders what the exit strategy is in a way that doesn't leave the cartels and the drug lords thinking, we won.
It's going to be very difficult because they have won. You can disguise it. You can find a decent interval, like Kissinger used to say about the United States and Vietnam. You can do all sorts of things, but at the end of the day, you shouldn't have taken on a fight you couldn't win, because if you can't win it, then that fact, which should be disguised, is only highlighted. And it's going to be very difficult to find a way out that doesn't, one way or the other, imply that the cartels, in their way, won. Now, we can continue this hemorrhage, we can continue this bloody war endlessly, but it's not going to become any easier to win a year or two from now. It's going to be the same, among other reasons, just because there is no good definition of victory. What does victory mean? Destroying the cartels or reducing their size and power but still coexisting with them, or having the United States eliminate drug consumption in the United States, which at the end of the day is the source of this issue? None of those things are going to happen. We know that.
Right.
When I hear Mexicans say all the time, if the United States were to reduce drug consumption, that would be great. Well, but that if is ridiculous. It's not going to. President Nixon declared the war on drugs 40 years ago, and U.S. drug consumption today is roughly similar to what it was then.
One of the things you talked about before was this sense of individualism. We talked about the lack of the historical context for the rule of law. One of the things that this all leads to is a lack of appreciation, I suppose, of process within government, process within organizations. And that has contributed to a great deal of corruption that we have seen.
Well, the corruption issue is a very serious one in Mexico and has been one for hundreds of years. It's not new. It's partly based on this traditional Spanish patrimonialist idea that you get into government in order to be able to dispose of the national patrimony for you and for your family, because afterwards you'll leave, and so you better get things while the getting is good. Partly comes from having absurd laws that cannot be complied with, but that cannot be openly violated, and so you have to pay off people to get around them. Partly comes from the lack of transparency and openness that Mexico has traditionally had, because people do not like to do things openly in Mexico. and this lends itself a lot to corruption, and partly has to do with the perception people have. In other words, in fact, real big-time corruption in Mexico has diminished enormously over the past 20 years. But the perception the Mexican people have of corruption is that it is worse than ever. And there's a flagrant contradiction between these two things, which we have to, in a way, expose, denounce, and correct all at the same time. And it's not simple.
In looking at the growth in Mexico, the growth in the middle class, it continues to explode as a consumer market. Talk about the differences and the challenges Mexico faces, not just with respect to the global situation and to its relationship with the U.S., but its challenges with relationship to other countries in the region like Brazil and Chile.
Well, Mexico has been growing significantly over the past 15 years, but certainly not as much as Chile, and more recently not as much as Brazil. And this, of course, is a problem because the country needs to grow at a higher rate. If not, it will get left behind, especially by a country like Brazil, which, though it has 60% more people than Mexico and has an economy about 30% larger than Mexico, has been doing very well in recent years and is displacing Mexico, not so much in Latin America, where Mexico doesn't have too much to say, really, but as a spokes country, so to speak, for Latin America in world affairs. Mexico is increasingly absent from world affairs, and Brazil is increasingly present in world affairs, partly because Brazil has been doing better than Mexico the last 10 years or so, and that inevitably shows up in universities, foreign ministries, banks, investments, credit agency ratings, what have you. So Mexico, we've got to start growing more than we've grown in the past, and we've got to start doing so quickly.
To the extent that Mexico doesn't take advantage of these things, doesn't do these things that you're talking about, Jorge, is there the danger of not only the economy shrinking, but even a return to more authoritarian rule in Mexico?
Well, Jeff, I don't think so. I think precisely the main thrust of my book, Mañana Forever, is that the new Mexico which we've built over the last 20 years is irreversible. The middle-class society is irreversible. The representative democracy is irreversible. The economic opening, the opening of society is irreversible. We can move forward more or less quickly, and we have, in fact, only been muddling through for some time. But, you know, muddling through is not so bad compared to the alternatives on occasion. And although I would prefer Mexico to move forward much more rapidly than it has, even muddling through for the next 10 years would consolidate everything we have. I don't fear any kind of return to authoritarian rule. I don't think it will happen, and I don't think that is something that Mexico should be too worried about. But I do think we should do much more to build a better democracy so that that temptation becomes more and more limited and circumscribed precisely by the consolidation and improvement of the effectiveness of our democracy.
Jorge Castañeda, the book is Mañana Forever, Mexico and the Mexicans. It is just out from Knopf. Jorge, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Jeff.